It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard around the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. Baltimore is on the map. It's on the map finally because Trump brought it up, and Elijah Cummings is crawling under his desk. You know, it's interesting, Mark. Every time you criticize a congressperson of color, it's racist. But the congressperson of color can call you anything they want to, and everything to them is a dog whistle. Because of Al Sharpton and Reverend Jackson and all these people. I mean, these charlatans. That, I tweeted out last night, I believe it was, somebody tell me what Al Sharpton has done for black people, just anything. And I tell you what, after over 3,000 or 4,000 likes and tweets and everything else, not one person could come up with one thing. And it was not a trick question.
Al Sharpton is a race baiter and a race salesman.
He's a race baiter calling Trump a race baiter.
And the only thing he's ever done for black people is to use them to advance his own causes.
Which is what, you know, he will jack you up and then absolutely, you know, take as much advantage of you monetarily as he possibly can to line his own pockets.
Now,
and not pay his taxes.
Now, were you a fan of the old fat Sharpton or the now skinny Sharpton?
I liked fatty.
I liked fat fatty. Sharpton better, didn't you?
Yeah, if I had to like one, I liked fatty better than I liked skinny. Skinny, I mean, he looks like he's lost an entire person. And
skinny
thank
Sharpton's
God that other person can't speak.
Skinny Sharpton is just disturbing looking.
Yeah, he's not quite the orator that the fat one was either. I mean, he's like, you know.
He's like fat. A head on a spike now. He's just kind of frightening.
But, I mean, forget his looks and everything else. These guys don't do anything for the black community. Trump comes along and scares the crap out of the Democrats because, you know, more blacks are working today than have ever worked in the history of the nation, making a living, don't depend on government anymore. And the Democrats are going insane trying to make him a racist. And of course, all the Republicans, you know, these code pink Republicans are saying, well, yes, he shouldn't handle it. I don't like the way he speaks. And he didn't. And then the Democrats come along and say, yes, he's racist. And there's no question about him being racist. And suburban women don't like it. And then they get one suburban woman who says she doesn't like it instead of, you know, and suburban women voted for him and they will continue to vote for him because he speaks plainly and he speaks, you know, the truth.
I think there's a lot of suburban white women who don't like the way he tweets, but at the end of the day, they're still going to vote for him because they like the results.
The only reason they don't is because they're told not to like it. MSNBC and CNN and all these ABC, CBS, NBC tell them every day, you have to hate this because we do. And the reason they hate it is because he gets right to the nub of the problem. He speaks in blunt force truth talk. Mm-hmm. And that's why we like him so much.
You know, one of the things that a lot of people who listen to this program probably don't understand, Chuck, because other than some of the crazy lefties that listen to us just so they can assault us on Twitter and send us hate mail.
Yes, I have a lot of that.
Absolutely. But the majority of our audience are conservative people, and they're not listening to CNN and MSNBC for good reason. But people need to understand, spend some time over at CNN and MSNBC.
Absolutely.
And you will see that they're reporting, they're doing updates on Trump's fascism as if that is a known fact, as if
he's
an admitted fascist.
They're opinions. They're not news.
So, I mean, they're doing, you know, but they're putting forth this as news as if, well, Donald Trump made yet another move toward making the country fascist today by as if that's real news.
Because they're the fascists. Antifa are the fascists. That's what, and Winston Churchill warned about that. He or Orwell, one of the two, said in the, there will come a time when all the fascists are claiming to be anti-fascists.
Well, when we look at Antifa or Antifa, whatever they want to call themselves, as we've discussed in the show before, that was originally, Antifa was created by Stalin. Hmm. It was Stalin's administration that invented Antifa. This, well, by the same name.
You know, it's interesting, Mark, when you go back and you look at these two powers that were against each other in the Second World War, the Nazis and the communists. The Nazis hate, you know, Hitler hated communists. And a lot of people in Germany were communists. They were the ones that, under the guise of some other thing, they were the ones that were interred. And the communists hated Nazis, hated fascism.
They were the same people.
Exactly the same people. They were all both socialists.
It was, you know, in fact, I give you a good example of Stalinist communism versus Hitler fascism. It's watch the Democratic debates.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same people, but they're going to beat each other up.
You know who the Democrats remind me of? And I'm going to throw this out there. I've been thinking about this for a few days because I've been listening to all this stuff that's going on with Iran and what Iran says and how they do it. Democrats sound exactly like the Ayatollahs in Iran. They use the same tactics, the same stuff. The Ayatollahs will go out and poke you, and then you respond, and they go, see what you did to us?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what the Democrats do. They go out and poke the bear, then the bear turns around and smacks them down, and then they become the victims. Iran is trying to set itself up as international victims. That's exactly what the Democrats do.
Well, Chuck, in a couple of minutes, we're going to do a little history lesson here for people. So I want folks to really pay attention. We're going to get a little down in the weeds, but we're going to cover some important stuff. A couple of things I wanted to cover just real quick before we get into that. We all know that Bernie Sanders has had major problems at his campaign headquarters.
Yeah.
With the $15 an hour thing and not paying his own people and then agreeing to pay them.
Well, these people lie. It's what they do. It's one of the reasons they hate Trump, because he tells the truth. And then they go, no, he lied about this. And you know, it is historically true that if you tell the truth, you will get hung for it.
Well,
people don't like to hear it. I mean, it's like this thing on Baltimore. No one wants to hear it. Everybody knows it's there, but nobody wants to hear it. Of course, the rest of the nation who have never been to Baltimore don't know it's there. And, of course, you can always point to a place where it's beautiful in Elijah Cummings' congressional district. But in every town, I grew up in one of the poorest counties in Kentucky, in northeastern Kentucky. It was hillbilly heaven. But within that town, there were great houses and people with great wealth and stuff like that. So you could always measure that. But that's how the Democrats want to measure it, and it's not true. So, you know, Jesus was hung on the cross for telling the truth.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, so, I mean, you know, that's a great example of what happens to you when you tell the truth.
So where I was going with this is he's caused all this stir with the $15 an hour thing. Now, two more things have happened, Chuck. One, there's this group inside the federal government, which is called the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the NLRB, it sounds very balanced. National Labor Relations Board.
Everything sounds balanced when it comes to government, and it's imbalanced always.
Right. So it sounds like, oh, so these are people who are going to help labor have good relationships.
Right.
What it really is, it's a pro-union branch of the government that is meant to enforce unions. So one of the rules is that if your employees want to unionize and you fire them, that's a federal penalty. That's a federal offense. You cannot fire your employees for wanting to unionize.
Mm-hmm.
Except the in Bernie's campaign management fired the three employees who started this union trouble.
Yeah, Democrats can get away with anything.
Well, those three employees have actually filed a complaint at the NLRB.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not to be outdone, Elizabeth Warren comes into play now. Elizabeth Warren says, I'll see your $15 an hour scandal, and I'm going to raise you slave labor. So Elizabeth Warren goes out, she runs ads for college kids to have free internships on her campaign, where they're going to bring you in and you're going to get intern credits and learn about politics. And now she's being charged by the students. We're talking places like Seton Hall and stuff, where the students are coming in, they're not getting an internship, and they're being pushed into what should be paid positions, basically doing slave labor for the campaign.
free.
They're so hypocritical. It's unbelievable. I mean, they really are. And if it weren't for the mainstream media, or if it weren't for just the media period, they'd never get away with this stuff.
But I mean, can you imagine? She's got them out doing it for nothing.
Yeah, I can imagine anything. They'll do anything. It doesn't matter as long as they're not held accountable, and they know they won't. You and I will talk about it. Some of the media will talk about it, and nothing will be done.
So speaking of media, you know who
Scott— hell, look at Hillary Clinton and her FBI experience. I mean, it's incredible what she got away with. Or maybe. We don't know whether she's going to ultimately get away with it or not.
So you know who Scott Dworkin is, right?
Mm-mm. I don't.
Oh, you've got to know him.
Well, I don't.
Oh, he's a far left liberal from the Clinton era.
Who isn't?
So he came out. This is the 1 year anniversary of a tweet that he put out. I wanted to congratulate him on it. Mm-hmm. His 1 year anniversary of his tweet is, I guarantee, this is no joke, I guarantee Sean Hannity will be in prison within 1 year.
Yeah, well.
That year has passed. Mm. Does not appear that Sean Hannity is in prison, or he has a great studio inside his prison. Because it looks terrific. You don't even see the bars when the cameras, you know, when the camera swings over, you don't even see the bars.
These people are insane. They really are. And I'm so surprised that a group of Americans really support them and keep, you know, electing them. I just don't. I mean, if you look at places like Baltimore, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, I mean, you can go on and on and on where these Democrats rule and have for many years, and they're everything is deteriorating around them, and no one and the voters don't hold them responsible.
Not really.
I mean, all of California. I lived in California when it was the golden state. There was no question about it, and it's not anymore.
Well, it's golden now, but for different reasons, from people urinating all over the street.
Yeah, right.
So,
well, I mean, you're talking about, just put it in perspective. You're talking about people who run cities where people poop and pee all over the streets, everything else. They can't take care of it. There's bubonic plague started, which we haven't seen since the Middle Ages. Crap like that. And these people want to save the country. Are you kidding me? They can't even save the cities that they run.
You know, one of the things that just drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. If you're a congressperson, what is your job? Your job is to represent the 710,000 people in your district, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You run a local office.
That's what it's supposed to be.
You're their voice in Washington when red tape gets too heavy. You are supposed to be their voice representing the needs of those 700,000+ people.
Well, Elijah Cummings got $15 billion from Trump. Where did it go?
Well, my point is, when you have the squad down south feigning their pain at the border, how does the squad at the border at Mexico help their people in New York, in Detroit, in Minneapolis? How is that helping that district?
It's not, because it's party politics. It has nothing to do with their district. It has nothing to do with their state. It has to do with their party.
Well, I think it's even more
exactly
than that.
Exactly what George Washington, oddly enough, our first president, warned against in his final speech.
I think it's even more than that, and that is we live in an era today, Chuck, where everybody wants to be famous.
Well, that's true. There is a little bit of narcissism involved in this.
There's a lot of it.
With narcissism comes hyperbole and hypocrisy.
So we're in this world where everybody wants to be a Twitter star, a YouTube star, you know, people, and you know that. You know that from your years in Hollywood. People are becoming famous now for nothing other than being famous.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They haven't done anything. This is what I think is going on here. To be a good congressperson is not to be on the national stage. It is to not be on the national news. It is to not be flying around the country protesting what is happening in other people's districts. It's to stay home and go back and forth between your district and Washington, trying to take care of the 700,000 people that voted you into that spot.
Well, let me put this in perspective for you. Nancy Pelosi and I think AOC and somebody else, if not Omar, one of the two of the squad, are in a hotel in Venice, Italy, criticizing Trump on their recess. I mean, what? What the hell are you doing in Venice, Italy? You don't represent Venice, Italy.
It would be on a fact-finding mission.
Yeah, right.
The fact that we're finding
how much poop is in the canals. There's a lot of it.
They were there finding out how good the Italian food is in Venice.
Well, I mean, it's insane, and people tolerate it, which I find amazing.
By the way, you and I have both been to Venice together.
Yes,
we have. And the canals are sewers, aren't
they? They're full of poop. They are.
And it smells.
Yes, it does.
You see the Roman.
Nancy Pelosi's probably over there saying, well, this is a lot worse than San Francisco. It's not, because at least you won't get it on your shoes.
Oh, the smell here reminds me of home.
Yeah, right.
But you see all these videos of the romance of going, you know, on the gondolas and passing under the Bridge of Sighs.
I've done it.
Yes.
And I've literally done it.
You are in a boat that is a sewer, and you're passing under the romantic Bridge of Sighs, which was the Bridge of Sighs because prisoners who walked across it would sigh because it was the last time they would ever see daylight because they were going to go be tortured for the remainder of their life. Not actually that romantic, is it?
Sigh.
Bridge of Bridge of Sighs, or the Bridge of Sighs, whatever you want to call it. But it's not sighs as in S-I-Z-E. It's as in, I'm going to get tortured now. Mm-hmm. This is the same way I feel when I turn on CNN.
You know,
I'm going to be tortured.
You made a good point, and I actually thought about this morning, that you and I both listen to CNN. We listen to MSNBC. I follow ABC, NBC, CBS. I watch the Sunday shows. I was shocked in a way, even though I know Chris Matthews. I don't know him, but I kind of know what his politics are. I think he's an anti-Trumper.
He gets thrills down his leg. We know
which
that.
Is a lot of people at Fox that may or may not know about it. And thank God for Fox, because they're the only ones that have anything on that's counter to the rest of them. And yet you turn on a Sunday show and here Wallace is going after Trump for being a racist and just went on a rant with Mulvaney, who was there, you know, trying to level the playing field a little bit and not given a chance. It's just amazing to watch the transformation of our favorite news outlet.
Well, it's one of the things you just said right a few minutes ago.
Which I don't think I'm welcome on anymore. Which I used to be welcome on all the time. But now I think I'm a little hard right for them.
Oh, we'll have to give them a call.
Well, I mean, you know.
You guys, they need to have Chuck back. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you said, and I wanted to pick this back up before we move on, and that is the way that the Democrats and the media, which is one entity now.
Exactly right.
So the way the Democrat/media are portraying it is that if you are a white male and you criticize a woman or a person of color, irrespective of the reason for the criticism,
whether it's valid or not, and it's normally valid,
that immediately makes you a racist or a sexist.
It's a dog whistle.
It's a dog whistle. If you criticize someone who is of the LGBTQ community, you are a homophobe. Mm-hmm. So as an example, if you don't like the fact that Buttigieg, or whatever the hell it is a socialist, by calling out that I don't like he's a socialist, you become a homophobe.
Right.
By calling out that Elijah Cummings is a horrible individual who basically rapes and pillages his community, that means you're a racist for saying that.
Well, they're protected by skin color, basically. They're so identity politics oriented that no matter what it is, if you have color in your skin, no matter what it is, then that's just a protective barrier that you can't penetrate. And so, the worst thing that, you know, these Code Pink Republicans want to be called is a racist. It scares the crap out of them. It doesn't scare Donald Trump, obviously. And the Republicans who won't stand up to the Democrats can't learn anything from him. All they can do is continue to criticize and be on the Democrats' side, which I find appalling.
The president is a little too self-aggrandizing for my particular flavor, but he is a badass.
You know,
so I'll live with it.
I mean, come on.
So I'll live with it. So Ilhan Omar, sticking with this, Ilhan Omar, Chuck, said that we should be more fearful of white men.
Oh, absolutely. We're dangerous.
White men are the major cause of death in America. You knew this, right?
Yeah, well, there are more of us, so we obviously cause more death.
Now, would you like to guess where she gave this speech at?
Let me think. Care?
You're close.
Okay.
It was an interview on Al Jazeera.
Well, they're the same thing.
She said, I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country because they're actually causing more deaths within this country.
Let me tell you something. She is an Islamist, just like Tlaib is an Islamist. They both are.
Well, so we thought we would look into her claim that white men are killing everybody.
It doesn't matter. They say all kinds of, you know, ridiculous things. And
of again, the 532 known cop killers between 2009 and 2018, 302 of them were white, 201 of them were black. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So technically you could say
that in perspective.
Correct. You could say, well, more white people killed cops than black people.
But there are a lot more white people than there are black people.
Except blacks make up 12.8% of the population, which means black people are 3.5 times more likely to kill a cop.
Hey, listen, the interesting thing I find that's happening on the left is the Democrats in some ways are, I mean, they've always thrown the black community under the bus and sworn that they were going to do. It's like, tell me what Al Sharpton has done for black people. Nothing. Tell me what the Democrat Party has done for black people. Nothing. So the point is they will throw them under the bus as soon as they get enough Mexicans to take over or enough people of another color, brown people, however you want to describe them, from Guatemala, which has more deaths, less deaths than Baltimore does, and Honduras again. There's another interesting connection here. Guatemala and Honduras, they're all running away from this dangerous country that they're in.
It is a dangerous country. I've been
well
there.
It's not as dangerous as Baltimore. Baltimore kills more people, twice as many people as Honduras and Guatemala. So where are they running to? Are they running to Baltimore to get killed there? It's insane.
Well, maybe they'll go
or
to Chicago. Yeah, they go to Chicago.
Yeah.
So back to this thing here. In 2018, there were 55 cops killed. 23 of them were killed by blacks. That's 42% of all of them were done by blacks, which is 12.8% of the population. So
you know, this doesn't translate on podcasts or radio when you start talking about statistics. It just doesn't work. People don't get it.
Well, what it amounts to is,
go ahead.
What it amounts to is it's the figures don't lie, but liars figure.
Yeah.
She can get on there and say, well, white people kill more people. Only because blacks represent 12.8% of the population. But when you look at who is killing the most people as a group, the African Americans are outweighing it. And this is not, and I'm going to get accused of being racist for saying this, but it's a stat.
Let me tell you about being racist, and this is going to absolutely fall on my shoulders because I watch it very closely. You go look at advertisements and compare black people who are in authority. You listen to me and the white guy is going, oh, my dog's a horse, and going outside. Have you seen this one where the little white guy is sitting in the middle getting a new apartment? He's got a horse for a pet.
Yeah.
A little horse. And there's a black, skinny black guy telling him how to live his life because he didn't know how, which is pretty much the advertising of today. So they're dominating in advertising. They're dominating on Netflix. They're dominating in movies. They're dominating in music. They're dominating in sports, which fine. I mean, this is all fine, but the point is, it is not per capita representation. They're pushing everything, and they're doing the same thing with women. Men are put in the background. Women are brought in the forefront. And Netflix, I mean, I defy you to go on Netflix and find something where a man is the lead in any movie or new thing that Netflix is doing. And, of course, they're all, you know, they're no good. I watch all this stuff. They're no good.
Now, did you watch Amazon series Jack Ryan?
No.
That's actually really good.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good. And speaking of entertainment, we went to see
And by the way, I'm not whining, complaining. I'm just trying to put in perspective what's happening. We are being force-fed all of this stuff as if it's normal, and it's not normal.
We went.
And it's always, and by the way, for the left, it's not enough because it's never enough.
So we saw the movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, did you go see that? The Tarantino thing?
Tarantino, Leo DiCaprio.
Is it any good?
It's really strange. There are a lot. There's an enormous amount of big talent in the movie that make all kinds of cameo appearances. Mm-hmm. It takes you a little while to catch up to what's going on.
Scorsese's got a new one out called The Italian. Or The Italians or something like that.
But it was really, really an odd movie. And it casts Leo DiCaprio as being a 60s actor, late 60s actor doing television westerns. Hmm. Which automatically, when you think of Leo DiCaprio playing a western, right.
No, not Clint Eastwood. He was a great big guy who had a skiing accident and drove a ski pole through his chest.
Wow.
Clint Walker.
Oh, okay.
Clint Walker. I mean, yeah. Clint Walker was like 6'9", 500 pounds and in great shape.
So DiCaprio playing a guy who is a television western star.
Well, you got to shoot from the shoes up to make him look bigger.
Yeah, the cameras all had to be dug into the ground.
Exactly right. This guy's huge. No, he's not. The camera's underground.
It's kind of an odd movie, but it was entertaining. I will say DiCaprio is actually a great actor.
He is a great actor. And so is, what's his name that everybody puts down? Oh, gosh.
Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt. Everybody puts Brad Pitt down. Brad Pitt's a great actor, I think.
Yeah, they're both in it. They both do a great job acting in the movie. Mm-hmm. But the movie, because it's Quentin Tarantino, so you know the movie's weird.
You know, it's a weird thing for me because I lived in that community for so long. I mean, we're talking about 45 years. I crossed the paths of everybody eventually. And a lot of people were fans of mine because they liked my shows and things like that. And I've spent evenings with Tom Cruise and all of those people that you mentioned. I haven't with DiCaprio. But it's really interesting as a mixed kind of feeling to admire them for what they do. Absolutely admire them. There's no question about it. And you look at their politics, you just go nuts. I mean, it's very conflicting for me, personally.
And I think that's one of the difference in actors, because acting, I mean, when you think about these people that are great actors,
yeah.
What's the big skill that they have? The big skill that they have is they can pretend to be someone else.
Right. Yeah.
And that wasn't your skill. Your skill was being yourself.
Myself. If you watched me on television, you knew who I was. You may not have known this side of me, but you knew who I was because it's who I was.
So if you watch
mistakes and all,
if you watch your program, you get to know who Chuck is.
Right.
If you watch these actors, you will never know who they are. Mm-mm. Because they're like a musician who knows how to, you know, impersonate other people. You never know what
really
they sound like.
Because you'd watch Carson or even today's shows and these actors come on and they're usually kind of dull in person. They don't have a lot of personality. They come alive. What was it Jimmy Stewart said at Carol Rosenblum's house one night? I'll never forget. I was there at dinner and he said, "I come alive when you chalk my toes." Which means I hit my mark. In other words, I'm getting ready to perform. That's when I come alive. Otherwise, I'm not really that interesting. I thought he was interesting, but, you know, most of these people are, you have to chalk their toes to get anything out of them.
Well, you ever see Obama without a teleprompter?
Yeah. You know.
He belongs in Hollywood because basically he was a good script reader.
Well, a lot of people say that about Trump, too. He's not even a good script reader, frankly.
I mean, no, Trump is best when he goes off the script.
Exactly right. Yeah, yeah.
But this, I mean, think about this guy, though. You go back to Trump for a minute. Obama couldn't actually read you his phone number without a teleprompter.
Right.
Trump can get up and give a 2-hour live talk without a teleprompter.
Amazing. Yeah.
True. I mean, he can get up in front of a group in a rally and talk forever.
Yeah.
And not miss a beat.
Yeah, it's like a jazz musician riffing. I mean, you know, it's just amazing.
It's because he actually knows the topic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's it in a nutshell. As somebody who has done speeches. As opposed
to Miller, who went on, you know, before the Democrats and had no idea what he was talking about, didn't have a clue, because Andrew Weissman wrote the report, not him.
I think that that is – I think the Democrats wanted to bring Mueller out and look at this report because the Democrats believed that most Americans hadn't read the report.
Right.
I think what they learned was that Mueller has not read the report.
Nor did he write it.
I really have come to the conclusion that Mueller was put in there because of his heroic status.
That as he a had, Marine 40 right, years ago or 50 years ago.
Yep, that he had little to do with this thing.
Right.
That he had some loose ties to being a Republican.
Very loose. He and was a deep state Republican.
Yeah, and that Hillary Democrats via Weissman and all the other people that were put on that committee came in and put this report together.
Weissman's just a bad guy. I mean, he put people out of business, put them in jail, put them in. You know, they're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, that he may die in prison. Okay, and I thought, well, get Andrew Weissman in there. He'll put him in, you know, solitary confinement, just like he did. What's that guy's name?
Manafort.
Yeah, who evaded taxes or some kind of crazy thing that the DOJ wouldn't even consider. And that's during the Obama years, didn't even consider prosecuting him on, but Mueller did. And so now this guy ends up in solitary confinement. I mean, it's just nuts. And I'm no pleader for Manafort, and I'm not a pleader for any of them.
Well, Chuck,
I just
don't
get it.
I mean, look at the three-ring circus they did with Roger Stone.
Yeah.
Here's a 67-year-old guy who's not a, you know, Roger Stone is the least intimidating human being in the world physically, yes, with a deaf wife and two little dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They come in at 6 o'clock in the morning with SWAT teams. They bring in armored vehicles. They brought in an amphibian assault vehicle to come in from the water.
This is how Democrats operate. Look what they did with Clinton. Remember the little boy from Cuba?
Yeah.
In Miami or whatever, and they brought in this.
Janet Reno went in with guns blazing to get him.
Unbelievable.
But Trump is out breaking up families.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Which hasn't happened. Yes. Trump's out breaking up families, but Janet Reno was in there with machine guns,
yeah,
taking children away from their families.
Just like they were with Roger Stone.
It was amazing.
They didn't do this with what's his name? Clinton's friend, who they keep trying to attach to Trump, but he was really Clinton's friend.
Yeah, they are dead set on trying to tie Epstein to Trump.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, they're going out of their way to do it. They're just omitting the fact that Clinton even knew him.
Clinton is not going to get away from this Epstein
issue.
Well,
if Epstein dies, he might.
They have now subpoenaed all of Epstein's pilots.
Yeah.
So they've got the pilot logs. They're now going to get the pilots to testify. And what you're going to find is the pilots are going to testify that Bill Clinton was on that aircraft with underage children, mm-hmm, probably 27 times.
Well, look, he's got the entire media and he's got the entire deep state to protect him. They always have. They protected her. They protected him. We'll see where the chips fall.
Well,
which is disgusting to me. It really is.
But there comes a time when the left bails out on their people.
Well, they only bail out on when it gets just so intense that they can't deny it anymore.
Right. Eventually, they bail out on them.
I mean, like Weinstein. New York Times. All of a sudden, the New York Times is getting caught up with the FISA war. I mean, it's just insane.
So, I mean, look at the way they all sucked up to Weinstein, and now they all bailed on him. Hey, Chuck, let's take a little break here for a minute to talk about Blue Emu.
You know, this episode of Blunt Force Truth is brought to you by Blue Emu Pain Relief Products. I've been in show business for 50 years now, and I'm not slowing down, but I can always use a little help now and then. And Blue Emu's family of products are made in America. They've become a staple in my life. The deep, penetrating formula of Blue Emu Original is best for supporting my muscles and my joints. And I'm sure you've seen it. It's on a shelf in a blue and white jar. And by the way, I also use Maximum Arthritis for any arthritic pain and the lidocaine cream for numbing pain relief.
You can find this stuff everywhere, can't you? I mean, you can't walk into a store without seeing it.
Well, unless you're blind.
But you can even grope for it if you have to.
Yeah, it's there. There's no question about it. Now, not only do these Blue Emu formulas work great, there's no chill, no burn, no odor. Blue Emu works fast, and you won't stink. It's available at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Amazon, and other fine retailers.
I'm going to get to this stuff here. I have one more comment for you before we jump into this bigger topic, and that is the Amazon Times.
Amazon Times? What the hell is that?
Well, the Washington Times.
Oh, the Washington
The Post. Amazon Times. Yeah, the Washington right. Post. The Amazon Post. The Amazon Post is now reporting that Mitch McConnell is a Russian asset.
If only we could get rid of Mitch McConnell.
But they're claiming the turtle is a Russian asset. Yeah. All right.
Whatever.
I'm not the biggest fan of the turtle of McConnell. Either. Calling him a Russian asset is absurd. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, they are absurd. And and by the way, I've said this over and over again. I remember saying it about 6 months ago. I said, you think it's bad now? The closer we get to the election, just watch. You're not going to believe your eyes and ears. And the closer we get, the crazier it gets.
Well, it's like Donna Brazile. I mean, are you going to listen to me or are you going to believe your lying eyes?
That's right. You're so right. Oh. Man, oh, man.
So, Chuck, we're going to get a little history lesson here.
Okay.
What we're going to talk about is what is something that Donald Trump has been able to identify that the leadership on the left has not identified. And when we're looking at this election coming up, we have an election that's going to come up between capitalism and socialism. And socialism is just communism that you voted for.
You know, you're absolutely right with that. That's a very, you know, studied comment, and I applaud you for that. But this has been going on for 100 years.
Yes.
I mean, everybody thinks it's new. There's nothing new about it. The Democrat Party, the great thing about Trump is he brought them out of the woodwork. He shows you who they are because they can't stand him. But they've been doing this stuff for 100 years. FDR did it. Carter did it. Woodrow Wilson did it. Even Theodore Roosevelt did it to a certain extent. I mean, it's just amazing.
What is happening right now is President Trump has identified almost 100 years worth of history, and he understands his place in it. And he has a very strong grasp on right now, he is in a position to reform not only the United States, but to almost reform the world for the next 20 to 40 years.
He's having an impact on the people of the world, that's for sure. We see that.
And this is going to be a major change. Now, we're already seeing...
people of Hong Kong are rioting in the streets and carrying around American flags.
We're already seeing that he's making a major change in legacy with all of the judges that he's nominated. Not just Supreme Court, but judges across the country.
Right. District judges.
So here's what Trump has figured out. There were certain things in the past 100 years that have shaped the world. And it started with the completion of World War I and World War II, which most people, I don't think, understand that World War I and World War II were the same war.
Right.
It was just, World War II was the continuation of World War I.
Right. It was.
They took a break. Mm-hmm. So the completion of that, and then came something called the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944.
I guarantee you, most of our listeners have no idea what the Bretton Woods Agreement was.
The Bretton Woods Agreement, which is where
when you talk about these people and give their names, you have to tell who they are. You have to do the history on who they are, but go ahead.
Well, one of the main characters in that is John Maynard Keynes,
mm-hmm.
one of your favorite guys.
Yeah. Socialist from Britain who literally set up the entire continent of Europe on socialism and here too. He reinforced the idea of it here.
He was an atheist. He was born to a wealthy family.
He was a pedophile.
Absolutely.
Not that that has anything to do with economics, but.
Well, we don't want to be accused of being anti-pedophile.
Right.
God forbid that somebody thinks we're against pedophiles. And he basically was the guy who set up what is now the common economic system of Keynesian economics. So what the Bretton Woods Agreement did, folks, was simply this. The world came together after World War II, and they decided, how do we stop more world wars from happening? This was a brutal world war. We need to never let this happen again. What they concluded was that the way you stop world wars is that you need to level the economic playing field. The way that the economic playing field was established in the Bretton Woods Agreement was by creating something called the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And these banks would loan money to other countries.
This is all after 1945.
Correct. Or 44. And all of this went into play so that all of these other countries could rise up economically. And therefore, the belief was that economic discrepancies between countries caused wars.
Which, interestingly enough, if you listen to Democrats, just to reinforce what you're saying, money always solves a problem. We need more money. Baltimore got $16 billion. They need another $16 or $20 billion or $30 billion, or your problems will never be solved. Money is helpful, there's no question, but it's never the fundamental answer.
But in reality, Chuck, how many wars do you know were actually fought over money? They're fought over philosophy and theology.
Right.
Not money.
I agree.
But they believed that leveling the playing field on money would do this. So Keynes tried to come up with something called a bank corps, which would be this international money. That was shot down, and that's how the dollar became the world standard of money. So that's why everything in the world is traded in U.S. dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, what Trump understands is that in 1944, when this happened, the United States became the biggest contributor to the IMF and the World Bank. We became the nation's piggy bank.
We became the pocket to pick, as Trump says.
Yes. And you hear him use those words, that they've been picking our pockets, that we've been the piggy bank. He's not using these words because he just made them up. He's understanding what happened. We became the world's piggy bank. And our currency became the world standard, but our currency became the world standard because our currency could be traded for an ounce of gold. $35 could be traded for an ounce of gold.
And then Nixon came along.
Well, there was a reason Nixon did what he did, Chuck.
Tell everybody what he did so that we understand.
So in 1971, Nixon on a Sunday evening got on television and said that America would no longer be trading gold, $35 of U.S. money, for an ounce of gold.
Which is the international gold standard.
Right. So the U.S. would no longer be doing this. Now, by the way, just as a little sidebar, at that same point, he also did a wage freeze in America. And he also raised tariffs on products coming into the United States by 10%.
And for all of those who don't know, I know because I heard the speech way back when. As an aside, he turned kind of sideways on the microphone and said almost under his breath, "Well, I guess we're all Keynesians now," referring to John Maynard Keynes.
Correct. So Trump understood this.
A socialist.
Now the next event comes into play that Trump understands. That's August 1991. That's the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, why is that playing into today? Because that was the collapse of the only other superpower in the world, militarily.
Right.
Leaving us as the dominant military force on the planet. Mm-hmm. Now, the next event that comes along, and people are going to think, go ahead.
What happened to that dominance? What took place from 1991 till the present? Well, the military has been beaten down. We've been in countless wars. It's not what it used to be. And so Trump is trying to make it what it used to be.
Our military, yes.
Yes.
Now, the next event that comes along is mid-2012.
Keynesians and Democrats, who are the same, don't want it to be like it used to be. That's why Obama apologized to every country he visited for America.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because what we're looking at here is we're looking at a president who believes in American exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at the other side of the aisle as they believe in American imperialism. Mm-hmm. They don't believe we're exceptional. They believe we're evil.
That's right.
That's why they apologize for us.
And that's why Antifa can flourish, because they're fighting evil.
That's why slavery can never be resolved in this country. Mm-hmm. Because even though we abolished it, and even though we did all kinds of things to make it right, we will never redeem ourselves from this evil. We're constantly evil. And that's what these people believe.
And the founders are evil because some of them owned slaves. Not all of them, but some.
And they were white men. Mm-hmm. And they were rich.
And the attack against white men all stems from the founding of the country.
So when you look at the founding fathers, white, male, wealthy Christians. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't become a more evil person.
According to the left, that's correct.
So mid-year 2012, the world takes notice of U.S. fracking. Now, why was that important? Because when we came up with the technology to frack oil.
And I lived in Texas at that time. I remember it well.
We all of a sudden rendered the Middle East powerless.
Right.
Because now the United States.
You know, do you remember the documentary? You said you're into documentaries. The documentary where people were turning on their water faucets in the Northeast or someplace where they had oil. And they were lighting them on fire.
Yeah.
Swearing it was because of fracking.
So at any rate, yeah, that was the crazy thing, wasn't it? That it was because of fracking. So what happened was we just rendered the Middle East powerless.
The more independent that we become to the world and the less dependent we become on the world, the more the Democrats hate it.
Now let me tie all this together, why I'm got this scattered conversation. When we go back to Bretton Woods, Trump understands that our own government sold us out and made us the world's piggy bank, and it needs to stop. Mm-hmm. The reason that he would focus on the Soviet Union is because he realizes we are the military power in the world, mm-hmm. the only military power in the world. The reason the fracking is important is because the one weakness that the United States had was our dependency on foreign oil.
Right.
We no longer have it. We're now the world's largest oil producer.
I mean, think of the fights the Democrats had from oil lines coming out of Canada and all of this stuff that they constantly fight against. Windmills are the way to go. And it just went on and on and on.
So what President Trump has figured out.
That's a new Green Deal.
What President Trump has figured out is that, and the left does not want you to know this, people, and that is America holds all the cards for the world. Mm-hmm. We are independent. We have all the oil we need. We have the reserve currency. We are the superpower that can dictate the way this planet is going to run. Now, fortunately, America has always been benevolent.
We are a benevolent nation.
And we don't go and try to capture land and take over other countries.
They all want to be part of us.
But what President Trump understands is that we are exceptional. We are the leader in the world, and we need to take that position. And the left can't stand it.
They don't want America first at all.
They hate it. Chuck, talking. So the president has gone after tariffs. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, this is stupid. This is a horrible idea. We can't win.
I remember being in a studio in Austin, Texas, standing next to Karl Rove, who was going on after me. And they canceled me out at Fox. And he went on, and he and I had this conversation before Trump was elected. And the conversation was all about tariffs. And I was actually on his side. I said, you know, this is not a good idea. I went back to Herbert Hoover and the tariffs and all this kind of stuff. And I said, this is not a good idea. He uses it as a bargaining chip. And I tell you what, a lot smarter than I was.
Let me tell you
a lot smarter than Karl Rove, too.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of befuddling, since he's the ultimate deep stater.
Here's why Trump is right on the tariffs. Right now, 11%, just over 11% of the entire United States GDP is dependent on exports. So only 11% of everything we do in this country is exported out. We're internal. We make stuff for ourselves.
We just, if it's a better deal someplace, we take it. If but it's a bad deal, Trump doesn't want it.
But in Canada, Canada's GDP is 31% dependent on exports. Germany's economy is 46.12% dependent on exports.
Why they created the EU, and they did create it.
France is 30%.
BMWs and Mercedes.
Yep. France is 30% dependent on exports, and China is 20% dependent on exports. Here's why the president knows he will win all the trade wars. Because we don't need it, and they can't live without it. The worst you can hurt us, if every country on the planet isolated us and said we will never buy an American product, which they can't live without, they could only affect us by 10%.
If we guacamole may be a little more expensive, that's all. But we got plenty of guacamole, trust me. We got plenty of avocados. These grow in my yard in California.
Now imagine what happens to Germany if we say, don't send us any more Mercedes, BMWs, and Audis.
I'm going to have a tough time getting parts for my car.
Well, yeah, you and I would be very unhappy people. But other than that, think of what their economy would do if they couldn't ship those cars. We are in the proverbial catbird seat. And President Trump knows it. This is a guy who is focused on winning. Remember what he said. We're going to win so much, you're going to get tired of winning.
You know, I was staying at your place, and I was invited to dinner at a man's house who used to be head of GM. I don't know whether you remember this
or not.
Yep,
I do.
And I was over there in his garage looking at some of his old cars and things. And I said, well, tell me, who makes the best cars today? And this guy was head of Cadillac at GM, okay? And he looked at me with a very straight face and said, everybody, there are no greater cars than others. Everybody's making great cars today because we have to. He said, the Japanese made us compete, which is very, very interesting perspective from the inside of GM. And he said, we used to make cars that lasted 4 or 5 years and you had to get rid of them. He said, now we can't do it anymore because everybody in the world doesn't make cars like that. So we have to make cars that are just as dependable as everybody else. So today's cars, he said, they're all good.
So here's where I'm going with this. And I agree with you that everybody is making decent cars now because the world makes good cars.
And so do we.
And so do we. We make good cars too.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that the president understands.
1949 and 50 Ford. I mean, I remember these cars. They were great cars and they're selling now for, you know, $50,000 and $60,000 at Mecum and whatever the other auction house is. And these cars, literally, the body would fall off the frame around the engine because the only dependable thing in the car was the engine.
Oh, yeah, the bodies would rust out.
Yeah.
I'm actually shopping for a classic car right now.
Man, you got a lot of opportunities. They're expensive, though, boy, I tell you.
I'm looking for an Auburn boat tail.
An Auburn? Oh, jeez.
Boat tail was one of the best designs ever.
Yeah, I know. A friend of mine used to have one in California. It was $1 million car then, so good luck.
So here's the I'm not going to get the $1 million one. I'm not a Democrat. I can't afford that. So at any rate, here's the bottom line of this.
Isn't that interesting how things have changed? Used to be the Republicans who were the party of all the rich
exactly.
people, and now it's not anymore. Because of tech, basically.
So in the next 20 years, President Trump is going to, he's in a position right now to basically disintegrate anything in the world that is not pro-American, that does not serve us. So what I'm going to tell you is,
they're going to like that.
And here's what I think is going to be the outcome of this, Chuck. I think you're going to see the European Union fall apart over the next 20 years, probably less than that.
Well, it was designed to serve Germany anyway. I mean, let's be honest.
It's already falling apart, and you see Brexit. That just pushes it further. I think you may see NATO go away. I think you're going to see China lose their position, economic position of power.
Well, the only reason they have an economic position of power is because of us. We fed them so much money, they've rebuilt everything. They've overbuilt.
I think you're going to see Russia collapse. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see the Middle East become irrelevant now because we don't need them. Mm-hmm. Now, they'll still pump oil and they'll still sell oil, but think about
Europe needs them.
But think about how the Middle East rose to power in the 70s.
It was all oil.
Everything was about oil. They dictated the world of what was going to happen. Everybody sat on the edge of their seat waiting for the oil cartel to have their meeting every month.
OPEC would have a meeting every month, and everybody go, "Well, boy, I hope this works out for us."
Think about that. We would all sit there with bated breath, waiting to see what's OPEC going to do.
Now we don't care.
Now we don't care because we don't need them.
The Straits of Hormuz, by the way, that's for Europe, China, Japan, Korea, all of those countries. They're the ones that should be there protecting the Straits of Hormuz because they need it. We don't.
Here's the last thing that I think the president will accomplish. I think he's going to crush environmentalism. I think he is going to wipe out this open border philosophy.
You mean progressive environmentalism?
Correct. Yeah. Fake environmentalism.
Fake environmentalism.
Open borders.
And all that crap.
And I think that he could well have the ability to finally bring down identity politics.
Well,
and I think he does that by heading face into it and calling these people racist. I heard the president this morning on an impromptu interview, and what he flat out said, Al Sharpton is the racist.
He is a racist.
Elijah Cummings is the racist. But no one's ever had the stones to say it.
Exactly. I mean, and this is what Republicans should learn a lesson from. They won't, but they should, because they're scared to death of being called a racist. And he's not. And he has no fear. You have to admit, I mean, the guy's a badger. He just wades into it and lets it go.
And President Honey Badger.
Well, he is. I mean, he's just like a badger, you know. And these status quo Republicans have not been, and they need to be. And they could learn a lesson, but teaching old dog new tricks, I don't know, it doesn't work sometimes.
I may be the only
old dog that you could teach new tricks to.
I don't think so. I think we're at a turning point right now.
If it's successful, they'll turn, because they'll go any way that protects their job.
I'll tell you why I think there's an inflection point right now, Chuck, and that is everybody in politics, everybody in the media, everyone in entertainment, everyone in business, we've been since the 70s. This started in the 70s. Think about TV shows like 60s. One thing about in television, think of stuff like Sanford and Sons.
Yeah.
Where the black guys were the clever people and the dumb guy was the white cop. Mm-hmm. Or the Jeffersons. The black people were the clever guys and the stupid white guy neighbor was the butt of the jokes. This all started then.
Thank you, Norman Lear.
And yes, and we all became afraid.
And what is Norman Lear known for in Hollywood?
Yeah, communism.
No, he has been a progressive since the beginning. He talks about the Progressive Party all the time. Rob Reiner, everybody's concerned about him. Well, Rob Reiner and Norman Lear are close friends. They did All in the Family together. These ties go way back. And Norman Lear is literally the Progressive Party of Hollywood. He always has been. Even when it wasn't fashionable.
Well, I think where this inflection point comes in is the fact that Trump is making it okay to call people racist other than us.
Well, look, this whole game of racism is projection. It's what the Democrats do so well. They project all of everything that they're for onto the willing accomplices, which are the Republicans. They've always done it. They've gotten away with it forever. And he's breaking that trend. He really is. And people are saying, well, you know, everybody else, you call everybody a racist. I don't care anymore because it has no meaning. It doesn't impact my life. I'm sorry. I'm not a racist. I know it. And so you can call me whatever you want to.
And he's making other people feel safe to do it. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more people that are now coming out and willing to say, I'm not a racist and I'm not putting up with this nonsense anymore.
Listened over the weekend, because of his tweets about Elijah Cummings, everybody on television, everybody, including Chris Wallace and, you know, his like, everybody called Trump a racist.
But it's not sticking.
Well, hopefully not, because it's not true. I mean, he certainly wasn't a racist when he got all these awards and everybody loved him prior to being president.
What? The NAACP gave him like a lifetime achievement award.
I know. It's amazing. And then all of a sudden he became a racist. How do you do that?
It's ridiculous. And I think America is starting to figure it out and starting to get past the identity politics. As we know, these kind of things are somewhat of a pendulum swing. And I think Trump is forcing the pendulum back. Mm-hmm. So well, I believe
as he,
that
as he does, they keep, you know, forcing every their ideas of right and wrong on us. Their moral high horse is the size of a small Shetland pony with the stirrups dragging on the ground. They have no moral high horse, and they constantly try to mount it against everybody else on the right.
I believe he is going to be the most important and successful president since Calvin Coolidge.
And isn't it funny that no one really knows who Calvin Coolidge is? I mean, you and I know.
He had the most successful presidency in the past 100-plus years.
I know. I mean, Ronald Reagan had his picture hanging in the Oval Office because he was so incredibly successful. And who did he follow?
Calvin Coolidge?
Yes, he followed Woodrow Wilson.
He became Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah.
And then after him came Hoover.
Right, who was a pink... The Hoover Institute. I mean, code pink. I mean, I have to laugh when everybody says, well, the Hoover Institute says, yeah, okay, fine.
I don't think Hoover himself would have been a part of code pink.
No, but the point is, you know, FDR continually drove us into that depression that people don't even understand. The Fed had a lot to do with it. And it's very complicated. It is. But, you know, we'd start coming out of it and FDR would raise taxes and we go back into it. And it just went on and on and on until the Second World War. And that basically it was his escape valve.
I don't know if this is lost on you or not, but you just made me think of this. Think of the contrast of Woodrow Wilson, the most progressive, most evil, most liberal president of that era. Mm-hmm. Followed by Calvin Coolidge.
Who was just the opposite.
Now we have Obama, who was the second Woodrow Wilson. Mm-hmm.
Followed by Trump, who was like more like Calvin Coolidge.
The second Calvin Coolidge. The only difference is he was silent Cal, right. And Trump is not Trump silent anything. Silent. He's not remotely silent.
There was a woman who was sitting next to Calvin Coolidge at dinner at the White House, and she said, my girlfriend said, that I couldn't get you to say three words. And I said, oh, yes, I can. And he said, you lose. He obviously had a sense of humor.
Oh, he had a brilliant sense of humor.
Very, very sarcastic.
Brilliant sense of humor. There's so many jokes and stuff that he did, even with his own wife and such.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting, though, that Woodrow Wilson vilified. Followed?
Not even, he's lost to history, frankly. But Winston Churchill, who was also like that, who literally saved the British nation, became vilified over the years. Margaret Thatcher came along, did all these great things for Britain. She's vilified. I mean, anyone who's on the right, who does the right thing, and the country prospers. I mean, look at the prosperity we're in right now. It's unheard of.
And as Trump, it was under Coolidge.
And, yeah, well, the Roaring Twenties, yeah. And here, you know, the Democrats are pillorying him, saying, oh, well, everybody isn't feeling it. I mean, give me a break. Everybody isn't feeling anything.
Obama Obama was our era's Woodrow Wilson. Trump is our era's Calvin Coolidge. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Chuck, that's it for today.
Well, that was a lot packed into 45 minutes, I'll tell you, my friend.
That was an hour. Thanks for your
presentation. Oh, an hour. And really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you enjoyed Blunt Force Truth. Leave us a good review on Twitter and iTunes and every place else you can leave a good review.
Just roam the internet looking for places.
We're growing. We're really growing. Every podcast, we grow a little bit more, and that's because of you. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.